accession number 18259, reel 13.
Gallantry, reel 13.
Yes. It was nice to see the Germans who had been guarding us locked up in this billet. Boat was on the other foot now. Some of them, some of the people who weren't bad really, were chatting to them the day before we were actually released. They were more or less saying how fed up they were and that we were glad it was all over. It was come to an end, you know. A lot of them were elderly men, you know, the guards. And as I say, a lot of the prisoners, they just went on the rampage. They went through these billets where the German army had occupied, smashing things up, and there was photographs of all the hierarchy, Hitler and Goebbels and Himmler, all the had been on the wall at all, but smashed and pulled down, you know. And a lot of them had rifled for souvenirs, you know, rifle of drawers and whatever, in these billets, in these offices and things, you know. That didn't appeal to me. I was so relieved that it was finally over. And now, we were all then taken outside, were told to form up outside. We formed up in our usual ranks of three, you know, and we had an officer come along and give us a talk. And told us we'd be there for a few more days yet before things were organised to get it shifted. And whilst we were there, there was one day I went out with the... I don't know what it was. This was the lad who I'd been mates with. Yeah, it would be. We went out, there was a village not very far away, and we went down there. We're out to go, you know. We said we had to watch what we, you know, what we're doing. We had to sort of keep the British tradition right, no messing about. And we went down there, and we came across a bakery, this pal of mine, me. And we got a sack of sugar, white sugar. And it was more than the usual. We used to get a sack of about, I don't know, 100 weight sacks, I think. They used to come in at one time in the old days, did sugar into the shops, from what I could remember. But this was a great big thing. And we managed to get it back between us, on our backs between the two of us, back to the camp. And because by that time, of course, the Yankees were in, you know, the American troops were in, you don't know. And that was the first time that I'd seen any white bread for I don't know how long, you know. And the Americans, they had given us loaves of white bread, you know, And I said, I mean, this chappy, old billet was near the gates. And we had this big sack of sugar between our bed spaces, where we and we were selling it to the Americans. We were bartering with the with the American soldiers, because, you know, the sweet tooth crowd, the relatives they are. And we used to get, in some of these Red Cross parcels, we used to get tins of powdered milk. There were Klim milk, it was the tight name of it, I think, if I remember rightly. And there were tins of about five inches tall, round, and had powdered milk in these. But we used to keep them, you see, for drinking out of, you know, when they were empty. And we used to have one of those as a measure, and we used to give them one of these measures for 20 cigarettes. And that's how we parted out with these American soldiers. He used to come on, got a bit of sugar, buddy? Yeah, give us 20 camels or something, then, you know. And of course, things were a lot more relaxed then, and we. And from there, was a question then of getting home. We went into this village. Well, it was more of a little bit more small town than anything. And I remember being in these houses, billeted in some of these houses in this village or small town, wherever it was. And there was an airfield far away. And we were taken down to this airfield in groups. And we sat there. Michael, fortunately, the weather was quite nice by that time. We were sat on this airstrip, waiting for our turn to get a lift home. And the American Dakotas were doing the job that time. Dakota aircraft, you know, they used for their troop carrying and parachutists used to use them, didn't they? The Dakotas. And it was a question of waiting there. I think we waited 2 or 3 days because I remember we were going back to these billets on a couple of occasions before it was our turn to get away. Used to watch, you used to be sitting there watching the plane coming. You'd say, now then, where's this going? Is it coming in for some of us, you know? You're in a group here, a bit further on, another group a bit further on. And, you know, he'd fly right over, damn it, we missed him. And another one had come in. Anyhow, eventually, as I say, we all climbed aboard, it's Dakota, and we took off and we landed in France. I don't know what the airfield was in there. We landed in France and then we flew from there back to England in Lancaster bombers. We were just shoved in. We just got in anywhere we could, you know, because they weren't meant for carrying passengers, were they? But we just got in where we could, you see, so many, and it's on each Lancaster. I think then how the airfield we came in, and them southern airfields. I forget now.
Not Dunfold?
No.
Anyway.
Anyhow, whatever it was, we landed at Bar, and I'd let them kiss the ground on me. Well, because they were, I think they were Australian air crew, I think. Canadian, maybe. I think the Canadian air crew were they that brought us on. God, it nice feeling to get there. And we were put through it was a routine of delousing, you know. Bathed, delousing, and general clean up. Given a good meal. We each got a little bag. And the Red Cross, you know, I lost mine not so very long ago. I had it all that time. And then it was stolen. I got brought into it at the house here and it was stolen with one other thing. Little Red Cross bag, white bag with a drawstring and British Red Cross on it. And there was a little place where your name put in, a little nameplate on the front of it for your name to go on. And we had all the usual stuff in there, toothpaste, razor, toothbrush and stuff like that, shaving brush, you know, in this bag. And I say we went to a delousing session and a good meal and then a good kip. Can't remember much more about that except for going for an interview for D-Mob. What's the name of the airfield? I can't think. Anyhow, I know I finished up down in Aylesbury in Buckinghamshire. I decided, I said that I was wanting to, because you were asked if you wanted to stay in the army, or resign, go back to your battalion or whatever. I said, no, I wanted to finish. I was A release or something, you would have had a number for release or something like that. And, but before then, I remember being, I was billeted with some Ordnance Corps, group of Ordnance Corps people. This was around Aylesbury. And we were living in Nissen Huts. It's in a big house which was occupied by a few officers. And we used to go around the countryside and they had all stacks of ammunition. You know, all different parts of the countryside. All stacked, you know, at the Ordnance Corps. And it was examined every year, periodically, you see. And that's what we were doing. We were going round checking on the... It's something to keep you occupied whilst you didn't, you know, whilst you got finished. Going round in the truck and checking on all this ammunition to see that it was all right, hadn't been tampered with and everything. Oh, they were slotted about all over the countryside with these things, these ammunition dumps. From what I can remember, anyhow. And then... from there, I was given an officer's servant's job at this same at this house where these officers lived in Aylesbury, in Buckinghamshire. That was a cushy number. I was used to keep the officers' kit clean, and when I used to see them, I used to be off somewhere during the daytime. And obviously, his kit was all nice and clean for him when he come in for the evening. And get dressed and off out again, whatever. And I did that for quite a while. Don't know just how long. And then the next thing was to the demob centre. We showed with our trilby and suit, demob suit and trilby hats and whatever, and shorts. And I was given warrants then to your home, and that's. And then I remember coming home to a big reception at home. Well, I say a bit of a big reception, really, but a very few was because I'd been reported missing when I was in the Middle East, you know, and everybody thought we'd gone for a Burton, you see. But whilst I was in this camp in at Laterina in Italy, we had our photographs taken and we were allowed to write letters, you see. So I did get in touch with my people at home and sent them a photograph, you see. So they, after a while, they knew that we were safe and that I was a prisoner of war, you see.
In what condition were you in by the time you got home?
By the time I got home, well, having had my... time resting at home, I was quite good. I was, when I first came home into England, we weren't in very good nick at all. But it's surprising, a bit, of, you know, a bit resilient. You know. And after good baths, good delousy, because we were all as lousy as anything, good sleep. Good food, and it wasn't long before I was really back in what I more or less term was almost tipped up condition again, in one condition.
Did you have any long term effects from the war?
I can't say that I had. The only thing was I never got my my hemorrhoid operation. I had to have that done when I got back home in England. But as regards, I mean, you talk about now, people are talking about stress, what have you. You have a short war, a few months, and everybody's stressed out. With nothing, well, we didn't know what it was, didn't know what it meant. And that's, we were fed up, I agree, fed up, wondering if you ever were going to see your people again, if you were going to ever get home again. And the times when you did think, well, it isn't going to happen. I think, you know, and you also think, I'm going to get killed somewhere along the line. Different things go along. And I was just so damn pleased that it was all over.
And how do you feel now about having served in the Second World War?
How do I feel now? Well, the thing is now, you join the army to be a soldier and to fight in a war, if a war comes along. When I joined, of course, we never expected it. No one expects it, really, I don't suppose. But it's the thing, you swear your allegiance to the Queen, to the Crown, and it's your duty, if you do that, to serve your country to the best of your ability. I know it's not very nice, I suppose. I mean, we didn't know at that time, when I was fighting this war, the atrocities that had gone on in, you know, in Germany with these prisoners. Never knew anything about that until we got home. I suppose had we known that, we would have maybe felt more bitter towards the Germans, you know. But I can't say that I ever really did. The people I came in contact with were the Wehrmacht, who were a vastly different people to these SS and others, you know, Hitler's crowd. And it's only with afterwards, when you read history of what went on, it was really appalling. Because I found that when I was fighting with the German soldier, particularly the ones that took me prisoner, I mean, they could have easily, had they been fanatical people, these soldiers, you know, the Wehrmacht, they would have just seen us off. But I think they were like us, like the British soldier. We were always trained, or I was always told, what I can remember now, that if you confront an enemy, you've got to think survival. If he's there to kill you, you've got to try and kill him first. But having said that, if he's not in a position to defend himself, you shouldn't kill him. You take him prisoner. That was my view on the war. And I think these Germans, I think they were trained the same way. But, otherwise we would have just been wiped up, blown off the face of the earth when those German tanks came along to take and took us prisoner. No, I know it might have been different had I, you know, had any serious injury maybe, or lost anyone, a family or close family in the war. I might have taken a different view against the German soldier, but I can't say that I had any hatred for them at all.
One thing that I'd like you to go back to is something you were telling me earlier off the record about Hull and what you witnessed about American soldiers in Hull. I think you saw a riot.
Yes. Is it on the tape, please? Yes. Oh, yes. This was whilst I was on one leave. Now then, I just can't remember what. No, any leaves? I don't think I had more of that. I think I must have been on leave from when I was in the BEF from France. I came on the leave.
I doubt if it would be then, because America didn't come into
the war. They weren't into the war by that time, were they? 41. No, it was another leave then that I'd had. 41. Yeah, it must have been snake, yeah. No, it can't have been that first one, could it? No one was in the BF now. It was whilst I was on leave, and I remember being in the Fernsway, and I was going to work. There was a pub I went into, it was at the corner of Brook Street. What do they call it? I don't know it now. And I'd been in there, and we were turned out of there one night, and there was such a human cry, and what started it, I don't know. But what I can remember is this pitched battle between, well, they seemed to be all American, black Americans, white Americans, and the police, the military police. And there was along the road, just along the pavement edge, away from the road side, from the traffic side, there was this, just near the electricity buildings, there was this little office, taxi office. And if I remember right, it was wasteland along, quite a long way, and it was fenced off with these pieces of wooden stakes and wire wrapped around them, you know, every now and I can remember they'd been pulled up, because once they were pulled up, they were a handy stick weapon. And they'd been all pulled out, and everybody seemed to be bashing everybody else, and particularly these military police did sort them out, you know. And then it wasn't long, I think, before the civil police vans arrived, and there were a few carted away, you know. And that's about as much as I can remember about it. Why it started, I don't know. But there used to be a lot. We used to come into the centre, from Ormond Spalding Moor, because there was a big air base there, if I remember rightly. And as I say, they used to come in quite frequently to Hull. They used to use one of the pubs called the Earl de Grey in Mightengate. They used to use that. It's one of the regular calls, you know. Yeah, the Earl de Grey. It was one of these places of ill repute, I think, you know. Yeah.